freezes. George puts his head down on the table, covering his ears. Patsy points an accusing finger at Alice and says, "But!" Duff sticks his tongue out at Andy, who glares back at him. My garrets are in chaos. There's a long silence broken by sobs from George.
"I want Daddy!" he howls. "I don't like you, Alice. You're a big meanie. I want Mommy and Daddy. We need to get Daddy out of the hospital. He's not safe there. He could get an air bubble in his IV. He could get bad medicine. He could get a mean nurse who is a murderer."
"Buddy," Jay scoops George up. "That's not gonna happen."
"How do you know?"
George asks fiercely, his legs dangling.
"Do you promise?"
Jace shuts his eyes, rubs one hand on George's little pointy sharp shoulder blade.
"Promise."
But I can see that George doesn't believe him. Worn out, Patsy falls asleep in her high chair, her rosy cheek drooping into a smear of tomato sauce. George and Harry watch a very unlikely movie about a bunch of baby dinosaurs having adventures in the tropics. Alice heads back to the ICU. I call Mom to tell her I won't be home for dinner. She answers from some loud place with lots of laughter in the background.
"That's okay, sweetheart. I'm at a meet and greet at the Tidewater anyway. So many more people showed up than we expected. It's a huge success."
Her voice is even and cheerful. No tension there at all. It must be a coincidence. Has to be. That bump in the night and Mr. Garrett. There can't be any connection. If I brought it up, I'd sound crazy. She raised us to be conscientious. The worst thing Tracy and I could do was lie. What you did was wrong, but lying about it made it 100 times worse, was a speech so familiar, we could have set it to music.
Chapter 41. Dishes clatter and crash when I call into Breakfast Ahoy to quit the next day. I can hear Ernesto swearing about the unusually big morning rush as I tell Felipe that I won't be coming back in. He's incredulous. Yeah, I know, it's completely unlike me to quit without notice, much less at the height of the summer season. But the Garretts need me.
"No creo que se pueda volver y recuperar ese trabajo,"
Felipe snaps, moved to his native Spanish before he translates.
"Don't think you can come marching back in and get your job back, missy. You go out now, and you go out for keeps."
I suppress a stab of sorrow. The relentless pace and energy of Breakfast Ahoy have been an antidote to the long stretches of stillness and tedium at the B&T. But I can't escape the B&T. Mom would hear about that right away. Jace protests, but I ignore him. "Getting rid of that uniform? Long overdue," I tell him. More importantly, quitting Breakfast Ahoy frees up 3 mornings of my week.
"I hate that this changes your life, too."
But nothing like the way things are changing for the Garretts. Mrs. Garrett practically lives at the hospital. She comes home to feed Patsy, snatch a few hours of sleep, and have long, ominous-sounding conversations on the phone with the hospital billing department. Alice, Joel, and Jace trade off spending nights with their dad. George wets his bed constantly, and Patsy hates the bottle with a mighty passion. Harry starts swearing more often than Tim, and Andy spends all her time on Facebook and reading, rereading Twilight again and again. The night air in my room is warm and close, suffocating, and I wake gasping for cool air and water. I head downstairs toward the kitchen, stopping when I hear Mom.
"It doesn't feel right, Clay."
"We've gone over this. How many glasses of wine had you had?"
Her voice is high and shaky.
3, 4 maybe. I don't know. Not all of them anyway, just a few sips here and there."
"Over the legal limit, Grace. This would end your career. Do you understand? No one knows. It's done. Move on."
"Clay, I..."
"Look at what's at stake here. You can do more good to more people if you get reelected. This was a blip, a misstep. Everybody in public life has 'em. You're luckier than most. Yours wasn't public."
Mom's ringtone sounds. "It's Malcolm from the office," she says. I'd better take it.
Hold on, Clay says. Listen to yourself, Sugar. Listen. Your first thought is for your duty, right in the middle of a personal crisis. You really want to deprive people of that dedication? Think about it. Is that the right thing to do?
I hear the tap of Mom's heels moving into her office, and I start to edge back up the stairs.
Samantha, Clay says quietly, I know you're there.
I freeze. He can't know. The stairs are carpeted. I'm barefoot.
You're reflected in the hall mirror.
I was just thirsty, and I...
Heard all that, Clay concludes.
I didn't. My voice trails off. He comes around the corner of the stairs, leaning against the stairway wall, arms folded, a casual stance, but there's something unnaturally still about him.
I didn't come here by chance, he tells me softly.
He's backlit by the kitchen light, and I can't quite make out his face.
I'd heard about your mother. Your mama. She's good, Samantha. The party's interested. She's got the whole package. Look, style, substance. She could be big, national, easy.
But, I say, she hit him, didn't she? It's the first time I've said it out loud. He turns slightly, and now I can see him better. I want so much for surprise or confusion to cross his face, but they aren't there. Just that focused, intent look, a little grimmer now.
An accident.
Does that matter? Mr. Garrett's still hurt. Badly. And they don't have medical insurance, and they're already broke, and...
That's sad, Clay says. Really. Good people struggle. Life's not fair. But there are people who can change things, who are important. Your mother's one of them. I know you're close to those Garretts, but think about the big picture here, Samantha.
In my head, I see Mr. Garrett patiently training Jace, coming up behind Mrs. Garrett in the kitchen, dropping a kiss on her shoulder, making me feel welcome, reaching out to Tim, scooping up the sleepy George, his face in the shifting light of the fireworks, solid and capable, clicking his pen and rubbing his eyes over accounts at the store. They are the big picture.
When you're 17 with your hormones in a riot, maybe.
He laughs softly.
I know, that seems like the whole world now.
It's not about that, I argue. Mom did something wrong. You know it? I know it. Something that hurts someone seriously, and... Clay sits down on the steps, tilts his head back against the wall, tolerant, almost amused.
Shouldn't your first concern be for your own mother? You know how hard she works at this job, how much it means to her. Could you really live with yourself if you took that away?
His voice gets softer.
You and me and your mama. We're the only three people in the whole world who know about this. You start talking, you tell that family, and everyone will know. It'll be in the papers, on the news, might even go national. You wouldn't be the privileged princess in her perfect world anymore. You'd be the daughter of a criminal. How would that feel?
Bile burns the back of my throat. I'm not a princess, I say.
Of course you are,
Clay responds evenly. He waves his hand, indicating the big living room, elegant furnishings, expensive artwork.
You've always been one, so you think it's normal. But everything you have, everything you are, comes from your mama. From her family money and her hard work. Fine way to pay her back.
Couldn't she just explain? I mean, come forward and...
You can't talk your way out of leaving the scene of an accident you've caused, Samantha. Especially if you're in public office. Not even Teddy Kennedy managed that, in case you haven't heard. This would ruin your mother's life, and yours. And, just to put it on a level you can understand, I don't think it would do much for your romance either. I'm not sure your fella would really want to be dating the daughter of the woman who crippled his dad.
The words drop from Clay's mouth so easily, and I picture trying to tell Jace what happened, how he'd look at me, remembering his face in the waiting room at the hospital, the lost expression in his eyes. He'd hate me. What kind of a person could do that? He'd asked. How can I possibly answer, my own mother? Clay's calm face wavers through the tears that have rushed to my eyes. He reaches into his pocket, pulls out a cloth handkerchief and hands it to me.
This isn't the end of the world, he says gently. Just one boy, one summer. But I'll tell you something I've learned in my time, Samantha. Family is everything.
Leaving scene of accident, one of most serious felonies in the state of Connecticut, up to 10 years of prison time and $10,000 fine. I stare at the information I've hunted for online until the stark black words mallet against my eyeballs. What would happen if Mom went to jail for a decade? Tracy'd have college, but then she'd be off somewhere. But where would I go? It's not as if I can throw myself on the mercy of my father. Since he didn't stick around for me to be born, I'm guessing he wouldn't be thrilled to have me show up on his doorstep as a teenager. But Mr. Garrett, it was Jace's night at the hospital tonight. He called me to say,
Dad's awake and that's good, and he recognized us. But now he's got something called deep vein thrombosis, and they can't give him drugs for it because of the head thing. They don't want bleeding into his brain. I listened to the medical jargon. Don't get why they don't just say it in English. Maybe because it's so damn scary.
I can't tell him. I can't. What can I do? Be there for them is vague and meaningless, like a t-shirt slogan or a bumper sticker, making a statement that never needs to be backed up with action. I can babysit, all the time, for free. I can... What? Pay the hospital bills? I pull my savings book from my desk drawer, scanning the numbers I've saved working and hardly spent in the last 3 summers. $4,532.27. That'll probably cover some band-aids and aspirin, even if I could find a way to give it to them without them knowing. I spend the next few hours coming up with ways, an envelope in the mailbox from a sympathetic friend, slipping money into the cash register at the store, forging documents indicating the Garretts have won the lottery, lost a sick, elderly, unpleasant, unknown relative. Dawn comes without any brilliant ideas, so I do the least I can do, the only thing I can think of. Run across the yard, around our fence, flip-flop slapping up the drive, let myself in with the key the Garretts keep under the kiddie pool, sharp and jagged, nearly buried in the too long grass. I make coffee. I pull out cereal boxes. I try to make sense of the clutter on the kitchen table. I'm wondering who's here and whether to go up to Jace's room when the screen door slams and he walks in, rubbing his eyes, then starting at the sight of me. Training? I ask, although at a second glance he looks too tidy for that.
Paper route. Do you know there's actually a guy on Mac Lane who waits to catch the paper every morning when I throw it? He yells if I'm 5 minutes late. What are you doing here, Sam?
Not. He comes up next to me, dipping his head to my shoulder.
Then I'm not glad to see you.
I wave at the table. Just thought I'd get a head start. Didn't know if your mom was home or... Jace yawns.
Nope, I stopped on my way back. She was going to stay at the hospital all day today. Alice rented that pump thing.
He flushes.
You know, for Patsy. Anyway, so she is taken care of. Mom didn't want to leave Dad since he was finally talking.
Does he remember anything? If he does, he can't have told Jace, whose open, expressive face never holds a thought back.
Zip.
He opens the fridge, pulls out milk, drinks directly from the plastic gallon.
Only being out there after a meeting, deciding to walk home for some fresh air, thinking it was going to rain, then waking up with tubes everywhere.
Is it the disloyal or the loyal part of me that's so relieved? Jace lifts his hands over his head, bending from one side to another, stretching, closing his eyes. Very softly, almost under his breath, he says, Mom's pregnant.
What?
I don't know for sure. I mean, not exactly the right timing for the announcement, huh? But I'm pretty sure. She's been sick in the mornings, chugging Gatorade. Let's just say I know the signs.
Wow, I say, sitting down hard in one of the kitchen chairs.
It's a good thing, right? I should be glad. I've always been glad before, but...
Not exactly the right timing, I echo.
I feel so damn guilty sometimes, Sam, lately, for the things I find myself thinking.
For some reason, well as we know each other, I've never thought about Jace feeling things like guilt. He just seems too healthy, too balanced for that.
You know how much those people piss me off, he continues, still in such a low voice, as though he doesn't even want to hear what he's saying. The ones who come up to Mom in the supermarket or wherever and tell her there's such a thing as birth control. Or this asshole guy who fixed the generator at the store last month. When Dad asked him if he could pay in installments, the guy said, "Didn't you know you'd be broke all the time if you had so many kids?" I wanted to deck him. But sometimes I think that too. I wonder why my parents didn't ever imagine what having another kid would mean each of us not having. I hate myself for it, but I think it.
I take his face in my hands, holding tight. You can't hate yourself.
I do. It's just wrong. Like, who would I want to do without? Harry? Patsy? Andy? None of them, but Samantha, I'm only kid number 3, and there's already no money for college. What's going to happen when we get to George?
I think of George's somber face bent over his animal books, of all the facts at his fingertips. George is like his own college, I say. Garrett, you. Jace laughs.
Yeah, you're right. But I'm not like that. I want to go to college. I want to be good enough.
He pauses.
For you. Not that guy from the quote-unquote wrong side of the track, Samantha.
That's her. It's not me.
I guess part of it's me, then, he says heavily. Because, Samantha, look at you.
I'm just some girl with an easy life and a trust fund, with no problems. Look at you. Then I have a horrible thought. Do you, like, resent me for that? He snorts.
Don't be ridiculous. Why would I? You don't take it for granted. You work hard all the time.
He pauses for a moment.
I don't even resent Tim anymore. I did for a while because he seemed so oblivious, but he really isn't, and his parents are the worst.
Aren't they? There's Mr. Mason sleeping his way through life in his recliner, ignorant to everything, and Mrs. Mason with her cheery voice and her cheery Hummel figurines and her miserable children. I think of Nan. Will she turn out like her mom? Jace, I say slowly, I've got some money saved. It doesn't mean to me what it means to you. I could...
No,
he says, his voice harsh.
Just stop it. Don't.
The silence between us now is heavy and still, stifling, different. I hate it. I fuss with gathering enough bowls out of the cabinets, finding spoons, keeping my hands busy. Jace stretches, locking his fingers behind his head.
I've got to remember how lucky I am. My parents may be broke, things may be bad now, but they're great.
When we were little, Alice used to ask Mom if we were rich. She always said we were rich in all the things that matter. I need to remember she's right. So like Jace, to pull himself right back to counting blessings. He comes close, touches my chin with a roughened finger.
Kiss me, Sam, so I can forgive and forget myself.
You're forgiven, Jace Garrett, for being only human, I say. He's so easy to forgive. No sins at all. Not like my mom. Not like me. When our lips meet, I don't feel the familiar warmth and ease. I feel like Judas. Chapter 42. There's a big hole where Nan should be. I could go to her and tell her everything, and surely Nan would listen and maybe even help me find my way.
Of all people, Nan would understand. She was there the day I got my period, on the tennis court during gym class, in white shorts. She noticed before anyone else did, pulling me to the side and took off her own pants. Shy Nan, walking in her underwear to her gym locker to get another pair and a tampon. I was there the first time we saw Tim really drunk. He was 12, and hustled him into a cold shower, didn't help, and made him coffee, likewise, before putting him to bed to sleep it off. She was there when Tracy had a huge day party at her house while Mom was at work, then left with her boyfriend, leaving us at 14 to kick out 40 older teenagers and clean the house before Mom returned. But now she doesn't answer texts or return periodic calls. When I come by the gift shop, she busies herself with customers or says, "I'm on my way to inventory the stockroom, have lunch, see my supervisor." How did our entire friendship, the whole 12 years we've known each other, get canceled out by what I saw? Or what she did? Or what I said about what she did? I can't let her just walk away like this, I tell myself, though Nan seems to have no problem doing exactly that. So, at 5 o'clock, the end of the B&T day, I catch up with her as she's making out an order form. When I put my hand on her shoulder, she twitches it off reflexively, like a horse shaking off a troublesome fly. "Nan, Nanny, you're just going to freeze me out? Forever? I don't have anything to say to you." "Well, I've got things to say to you. We've been friends since we were 5. That counts for nothing? You hate me now?" "I don't hate you." For an instant, there's a flicker of an emotion I can't identify in Nan's eyes. Then she drops her gaze, turning the key on the cash register to lock it. "I don't hate you, but we're just too different. It's too much work to be your friend." This last is unexpected. Too much work? How? Could I be high maintenance without knowing it? I scan through my memories. Have I gone on too long about my mother to her? Have I talked too much about Jay's? But I know it's been at least equal. I've listened for hours to the Tim drama fest. I've heard every twist and turn in her relationship with Daniel. I've sympathized with her over her parents. I've seen her beloved Steve McQueen movies with her, even though I've never really gotten the charm. All that counts for nothing. She straightens up, looking me in the eye. Her hands are unsteady, I notice. "You're rich and beautiful. You have the perfect life, the perfect body, the perfect grade point average, and you never have to work for a thing," she hisses at me. "Nothing comes hard to you, Samantha. It all drops into your lap. Michael Kristoff still writes poetry about you. I know that because he was in my fiction class this spring. Charlie Tyler tells everyone you're the hottest girl in school and lies about having had sex with you. I know that because someone told Tim and Tim told me. Now this Jace Garrett, who's definitely too gorgeous to be real, thinks you hung the moon. It makes me sick. You make me sick. Hanging around with you and being your sidekick is way too much work." Her voice drops even lower. "Not to mention the fact that now you know something about me that you could use to ruin my life." "I'm not going to tell anyone," I say softly, trying to swallow down the hurt. My chest feels so tight I can't take a deep breath. "Way too much work, Nan? What, because there's no way to cheat at being a friend?" "Don't you know me at all? I would never do that. You don't need to cheat. You're too smart in every way to do that. And I want to be your friend, and I need you. Something happened to Jace's dad, and..." "I heard," she says briefly. "Tim told me about it. And your guy came by the house the other day, too, to let me know how fabulously helpful you'd been, and that you missed me. Not going to tell anyone, huh? Hometown hottie obviously knew something was up." "I didn't tell him everything. Hardly anything." I hate that I sound self-justifying. "Just that we'd fought." Looking down at her hands, I see that her nails, always ragged, are now bitten to the quick, bloody and painful. "I never expected he'd come to your house." "Well, he did,
Mr. Hero to the rescue again. It's the thing you always get. Well, I get Daniel.
I want to say, you picked Daniel, but that wouldn't make anything better. She's red in the face now, with that look I know comes right before tears. Nan, I begin, but she cuts me off.
I don't need your pity, and I don't want your friendship.
Picking up her purse and hauling it up onto her thin shoulder, she says,
Come on, I have to lock up.
I follow her into the hall. She flips the deadbolt, turns, and walks away. At the last moment, she swings around, looking skinny and stiff.
How does it feel not to get what you want, Samantha?
I've never felt like this before. I've had that thought again and again since I met Jace, but it's always meant good things, not this pit in my stomach that travels with me everywhere. Jace picks me up at the B&T, asking if I mind if we swing by the hospital. I feel a fist grip my insides. I haven't seen Mr. Garrett since what Mom did.
Of course not,
I say, the kind of polite lie I've never told him before. The ICU is on the fourth floor, and we need passes to get up there. When we do, Jace braces himself visibly before heading into the hospital room. Invisibly, I do the same. He looks so shrunken in his hospital gown, tubes sprouting everywhere, his tan skin startlingly pale in the bluish hospital light. This is not the man who carries stacks of wood easily on his shoulders, hoists Harry and George up high, arcs a football effortlessly. Jace pulls the chair closer and sits, then reaches out for his dad's hand with the tape and the tubes. He bends to say something in Mr. Garrett's ear, and I stare at the heart monitor going up and down, and up and down. Driving home, Jace stares straight ahead. He doesn't reach for my hand as usual, but keeps both of his on the wheel, gripping tight enough that his knuckles whiten. I edge down in my seat, propping my heels on the dashboard. We drive past the exit for Main Street.
Aren't we going home? I ask.
Jace sighs.
I thought I'd head to French Bob's. See what he could give me for the Mustang if I sold it back. I put a lot of time into it, not to mention cash.
I grab at his arm.
No, you can't. You can't sell the Mustang.
Just a car, Sam.
I can't stand it. All the hours Jace has spent on the Mustang, whistling through his teeth, tinkering away. How he pours through Car Enthusiast or Hemmings Magazine, dog-earing the pages. It's not just a car. It's the place he goes to relax, find himself again. The way I used to search the stars, or watch the Garretts. The way I swim. It's not, I say, only that. Instead of continuing on the highway toward French Bob's, he pulls off now and loops back on the long road that lines the river, stopping in McGuire Park. The bug is old and noisy, but that's probably not why it's so silent when he turns the key and shuts off the ignition. It's the first time I've been here since that night. There are noises, the slow lap of the waves on the rocks since a speedboat has just hurried by, seagulls calling and plunging, dropping clams on the rocks. Jace climbs out, nudging at a rock on the dirt road with the toe of his sneaker, headed not to the secret hideaway, but toward the bend in the road by the playground.
I keep calling them, he tells me. The police. They just say there's nothing really they can do without witnesses.
A well-aimed kick sends the rock skittering off the sandy road onto the grass.
Why did it have to be raining that night? It's hardly rained all summer.
Does it really matter that it was? I ask.
If not,
he drops into a crouch, moves his finger in the dirt.
There might have been something. Tire tracks. Something. As it is, whoever did this will get completely away and will never know how much harm they did.
Or they'll know and not care. Shame burns in my chest now, replacing the anger over Nan. More than anything in the world, I want to tell him the truth. From the start, it's been easy to tell him that, truths I've never told anyone. He's always listened and understood. But there's no way to understand this. How can he?
when I don't understand it myself.
Chapter 43.
Hi, sweetheart. I'm making up some meals for you to have on hand. I'm gone so often these days that we don't get to have dinners together. I don't want you living on that garbage from Breakfast Ahoy or the snack stand at the club, so I've made up some dinners. That roast chicken one you like with the mushrooms and some pasta bolognese.
Mom says all this cheerily as I drag myself into the kitchen after coming home from lifeguarding.
I've labeled them all, and I'm going to put some in the freezer.
And on and on. Her voice is firm and calm, chatty. She's wearing a watermelon-colored wrap dress and her hair down, looking young enough to be my older sister. Mrs. Garrett has circles under her eyes these days, is gaunt and perpetually distracted. Though I've tried to keep things clean, the Garrett's house gets messier by the day. Patsy's fussy, George clingy, Harry misbehaving, Andy and Duff fighting like bears. Jace is tense and preoccupied, Alice even more acerbic. Everything is different next door. Nothing's changed here.
Would you like some lemonade? Mom asks. They had Meyer lemons at the Gibson's Gourmet the other day, so I made it with those for a change. I think this is the best batch ever.
She pours me a glass, the picture of graceful efficiency and maternal solicitude. Stop it, Mom, I say, sliding into the kitchen stool.
You don't want me to mother you so much, I know, but all the other summers when I've had to work, you've had Tracy to keep you company. Should I post a chart of what's frozen and what's fresh? I don't need to do that. You'll remember, right? I just suddenly realized how alone you are.
You have no idea. Something in my tone must get to her, because she halts, glances at me nervously, then continues rapidly.
When this election is over, we'll take a good, long vacation. Maybe somewhere in the Caribbean. I've heard great things about Virgin Gorda.
I can't believe you.
Are you like a robot now? How can you just act like everything's normal?
Mom stills in the act of putting Tupperware in the freezer.
I don't know what you're talking about, she says.
You need to tell the truth about what happened, I say.
She straightens up slowly, looking me in the eye for the first time in days, chewing her bottom lip.
He'll be fine.
She snaps a lid tightly. I followed it in the news. Jack Garrett's a relatively young man in good shape. Things might be rough for a while, but he'll be fine. In the end, no real damage done.
I lean forward, hands flat on the counter, my palms sliding across the cool surface of the kitchen island.
How can you even say that? Do you actually believe it? This isn't some nothing.
I fling one hand out, accidentally hitting the Waterford crystal fruit bowl full of lemons, sending it flying toward the wall, splintering on the tile floor with a jarring crash, lemons bouncing everywhere.
That belonged to my grandparents, Mom says tightly. Don't move. I'll get the vacuum cleaner.
Something about the accustomed sight of her bent over, moving the vacuum in orderly, symmetrical strokes, in her dress and her heels, makes me feel as though I'm going to explode. I jump down from the stool and flick the off button.
You can't just tidy it up and forget it, Mom. The Garretts have no health insurance. Did you know that?
She pulls the trash can out from under the sink, snapping on her rubber gloves, and begins methodically putting the larger chunks of glass into the bag.
That's not my fault.
It's your fault that it matters that they don't.
He's going to be in the hospital for months. Then maybe rehab. Who knows for how long? The hardware store was already struggling.
That also has nothing to do with me. Many small businesses are struggling, Samantha. It's unfortunate, and you know I've made speeches about that very issue.
Speeches? Are you serious?
She winces at the volume of my voice, then turns and switches the vacuum on again. I yank the plug out of the wall.
What about everything you've ever told me about facing up to your responsibilities? Did you mean any of it?
Don't speak to me that way, Samantha. I'm the parent here. I am doing the responsible thing, staying where I can do the greater good.
How will it help the Garretts if I lose my job, if I have to retire in disgrace? That won't fix anything.
What's done is done. He could have died. What if he died, Mom? The father of 8 children. What would you do then?
He didn't die. Clay called the police from the payphone at Gas and Go that night. We didn't just ignore the whole thing.
But you are ignoring the whole thing. That's exactly what you're doing. Mrs. Garrett is pregnant. Now they're going to have another baby, and Mr. Garrett won't be able to work. What's wrong with you?
Mom jerks the vacuum cleaner cord out of my hands, winding it into tight coils.
Well, there you go. Who has that many children in this day and age? They shouldn't have had such a large family if they couldn't afford one.
How is Jace even going to go back to school this fall if he has to replace his dad at the store?
There, you see, Mom says sharply. It's just like Clay told me. It all comes down to your feelings for this young man. This is all about you, Samantha.
I stand there, incredulous.
It doesn't have anything to do with me.
She folds her arms and looks at me pityingly.
If I had accidentally hit someone you didn't know, a stranger to you, would you be acting like this? Would you be asking me to give up my entire career because of something that's going to cause some temporary challenges for someone?
I stare at her.
I hope I would. I think I would, because that's the right thing to do.
Her exhalation of disgust ruffles a few strands of her tidy hair.
Oh, spare me, Samantha. The right thing to do is so easy to see when you are 17 years old and don't have to make any big decisions. When you know that no matter what you do, someone will take care of you and fix everything. But when you're grown up, the world is not that black and white, and the right thing doesn't have a tidy little arrow pointing to it. Things happen. Adults make decisions. And that's the bottom line.
The bottom line is that you hit a man and drove away, I start to say. But the shrill of Mom's cell phone interrupts. She checks it, then says,
Here's Clay now. This conversation is over. What's done is done, and we're all going to move on.
She snaps the phone open.
Hello, sweetie. No, I'm not busy. Sure, just let me go into the office and get that.
Her heels click on the tile down the hallway. The corner of the kitchen is still covered with lemons and tiny crystal shards. I slump back onto the stool, resting my cheek on the cool granite of the countertop. I've armed myself for days to talk to my mother, going over things in my head, the clearest arguments I could make. Now, I've made them all, but it's like the entire conversation didn't even exist, like it just got swept up and put away. That night, I climb out my window, perching in my old, accustomed spot. Despite all the years I sat in this same place alone, now it feels strange and wrong to be without Jace. But he's at the hospital again. Through the Garrett's kitchen window, I can see Alice doing dishes. The rest of the house is dark. As I watch, the van pulls into the driveway. I wait for Mrs. Garrett to climb out, but she doesn't. She sits there, staring straight ahead, until I can't watch anymore, and climb back into my room. Nan said things just come my way without me lifting a finger. It's never felt like that to me, but I've always been able to get what I really wanted if I worked hard enough. Not now. No matter how hard I try, and I've never tried so hard for anything, I can't make things better at the Garretts. Worst of all, things with Jace are stressful. I offer to be the coach when he trains. If your dad had the workouts written down, I can read them and call them out to you. They were all in his head, so thanks, but I'm all right. Dusty from delivering lumber, Jace turns on the faucet over the cluttered sink and splashes water on his face, then ducks his head to drink, accidentally knocking a half-full glass of milk off the counter. When it crashes onto the floor, instead of picking it up, it gives it a kick that sends it ricocheting across the linoleum, scattering milk. Alarm grips the back of my throat, metallic tasting. I go over and put my hand on his shoulder. His head is down, and I can see a muscle in his jaw twitch. His arm is unyielding beneath my fingers, and he doesn't look at me. The leaden fist around my throat tightens.
Dude,
Tim calls from the backyard where he's vacuuming the pool.
The frickin' thing's blowing out the dirt into the pool instead of sucking it in. Can you do your thing?
Yeah, I'll fix it. Jace calls back, without moving. What would anybody do around here without you? I say, going for a light tone. Everything would be broken. He snorts without any humor.
Kind of already is, isn't it?
I move closer, rest my cheek against his shoulder, rubbing his back. How can I help? I ask. I'll do anything.
There's nothing you can do, Sam.
Just... He turns away, shoves his hands in his pockets.
Maybe just give me a little space.
I back toward the kitchen door. Right, sure, I'll head home for a while. This doesn't feel like us at all. I hover in the doorway, expecting. I'm not sure. Instead, he nods without looking at me and bends to mop up the spilled milk. When I get home, where it's still and clean and hushed, all the outdoor sounds muffled by the central air, I climb upstairs, feeling as though I'm pushing through water or wearing shoes made of lead. I sit down abruptly halfway up, lean my head back against the step above me, shut my eyes. 1,000 times since this happened, I've been about to blurt out the whole story, unable to stop myself, unable to keep something this big inside from Jace. Every time I've bitten my tongue, stayed silent, with the thought, if I tell him, I'll lose him. Tonight is when I know. I already have. Late that night, there's only one dim light shining in the living room. Mom likes the overhead one, so I know right away it's not her. And I'm right. Clay is sitting in the big armchair by the fireplace, shoes off, this big golden retriever at his feet. Mom is curled up on the couch, fast asleep, her hair tumbling out of her careful bun, draping over her shoulders. Clay jerks his chin in the direction of the dog.
Courvoisier. I call him Corey. Purebred from Champions. He's old now, though.
Indeed, the muzzle that rests on Clay's bare foot is white with age. Corey raises his head at my entrance, though, thumping a greeting with his tail. I didn't know you had a dog. Mom's asleep? I ask, stating the obvious.
Long day. Meet and greet at 5 a.m. at General Dynamics. Then we had a speech at Republicans for Change and dinner at the White Horse Tavern. She's a pro, yo mama. Just keeps going and going. She's earned her rest.
He stands up and pulls the woven beige throw from the top of the couch, covering her. I start to turn away, but he stops me. Hand on my arm.
Have a seat, Samantha. You're burning the candle at both ends, too. How are those Garretts doing?
How can he even ask that question in his calm way? Not well, I say.
Yeah, a tough break.
Clay picks up his wine glass and takes a casual sip.
That's the thing about a one-man business, all riding on luck.
Why do you even pretend to be sympathetic about this? I ask, my voice unexpectedly loud in the quiet room. Mom twitches in her sleep, then snuggles her head into the pillow. Like, what happened is some sort of act of God, not something you were involved in. Like you even know what they're going through.
Y'all don't know much about me, do you?
He takes another swallow of wine, reaching down to stroke Corey's head.
I know better than you ever will what it's like to be poor. My daddy ran a service station. I did the books. Our town was so small, you hardly needed a car to get from one end to the other. And folks in West Virginia are what you might call naturally frugal. A lot of months he didn't make enough to pay his employees and draw a salary himself. I know all about being broke and having your back against the wall.
His eyes are suddenly intent on mine.
And I've left that far behind. Your mom's the real ticket, with a bright future. I won't let some teenager with a grudge take that away from her, or me.
Mom stirs again, then curls up, almost in a fetal position.
You need to distance yourself from that family,
Clay adds, his voice almost gentle.
And you need to do that now. Otherwise, Things are going to come out that shouldn't come out. Hormonal teenagers not being known for their discretion.
I'm not my mother, I say. I don't have to do whatever you say.
He leans back against the chair, blonde hair falling across his forehead.
You're not your mama, but you're not stupid either. Have you taken a good look at the books for the Garrett store?
I have, we all have. Tim and me and Jace, working on them. Math challenged as I am, the numbers don't look good. Mr. Garrett would be clicking his pen furiously over them.
Did you happen to notice the contract from Reed Campaigns? Your mom is using Garrett's for all her yard signs, her billboards, her visibility flags. That's a hell of a lot of lumber. She wanted to go with Lowe's, but I told her picking a local business looks better. That's steady cash flow for the store, straight on through November. Not only that, but the Bath and Tennis Club is using Garrett's. Your mama's suggestion. They're adding on a new wing for an indoor pool. Cash that goes straight into the store. Cash that could go away with a comment or two. Greenwood, sloppy workmanship.
What are you saying? If I don't break up with Jace, you'll what? Pull those contracts?
In the glow of the light, Clay's blonde hair shines angel fair, nearly the same color as Corey's. He looks tidy and innocent in his white shirt with the sleeves rolled up, his eyes big and blue and frank. He smiles at me.
I'm not saying anything, Samantha. Just stating the facts. You can draw your own conclusions.
He pauses.
Your mama's always telling me how smart you are.
Chapter 44. Early in the morning the next day, I cross the short distance from my yard to the Garrett's to find Jace. As I walk up the driveway, I can hear him whistling. It almost makes me smile. His tan legs and worn Converse are visible first, sticking out from beneath the Mustang. He's lying on his back, Duff's skateboard under him, working on the underbody. I can't see his face, and I'm glad. I'm not sure I can do this if I can see Jace's face. He recognizes my step, though. Or my shoes.
Hey, Sam. Hi, baby.
His voice is cheerful, more relaxed than it's been in days. He's at peace, doing something he's good at, getting away from everything else for a while. I swallow. My throat feels thick, as though the words I have to say have snarled into a choking ball.
Jace?
I don't even sound like myself. Kind of appropriate, since I'd rather not think this is me at all. I clear my throat.
I can't see you.
I'll be out in a sec. I have to tighten this up or all the oil will drain right out.
No, I mean, I can't see you anymore.
What?
I hear the crack of metal against bone as he sits up, forgetting where he is. Then he slips out from under the car. There's a smudge of black oil on his forehead, an angry red spot. It'll bruise.
I can't see you anymore. I can't do this. I can't babysit George or Patsy or see you. I'm sorry.
Sam, what is this?
Nothing. I just can't do it. You. Us. I can't do it now.
He's standing close to me, so tall, so near I can smell him. Wintergreen gum, axle grease, tied clean clothes. I take a step back. I have to do this. So much has already been ruined. I have no doubt Clay meant what he said. All it takes is remembering the look on his face when he talked about leaving his past behind, his implacable voice telling Mom to back up and drive away. If I don't do this, he'll do whatever it takes to ruin the Garretts. It won't take much.
I can't do this, I repeat.
Jace shakes his head.
You can't do this? You have to give me a chance to fix whatever it is I've done. What have I done?
It isn't you. The oldest, weakest breakup excuse in the world. And, here, the most true.
This isn't you? You don't act like this. What's wrong?
He takes a step toward me, his eyes shadowed with concern.
Tell me so I can fix it.
I fold my arms, stepping farther away. You can't fix everything, Jace.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even know it was broken. I don't understand. Talk to me.
His voice lowers.
Is it the sex? Did we go too fast? We can slow down. We can just... Anything, Sam. Is it your mom? Tell me what you need.
I turn away. I need to go. He wraps his fingers tightly around my upper arm to stop me. My whole body seems to shrink, as though I'm folding smaller into my skin. Jace stares at me incredulously, then drops his hand.
You, like, don't want me to touch you? Why?
I can't talk anymore. I have to go. I have to get away before I can't do this, before I blurt out everything, no matter what will happen about Mom and Clay and the store. I have to.
You're just going to walk away? Like that? You're leaving it this way? Now? I love you. You can't.
I have to. Every word feels like it's strangling me. I turn away and head down the driveway, trying to walk calmly, not to run, not to cry, not to feel anything at all. I hear quick steps as Jace follows me. Leave me alone! I toss over my shoulder, picking up my pace, racing to my house as though it's some refuge. Jace, who could easily catch up or outrun me, falls back, leaving me to wrench open the heavy door and stumble into the foyer, and then curl into a ball, pressing my hands to my eyes. I expect to be called to account for this, Alice ringing my doorbell to beat me up, Mrs. Garrett coming over with Patsy on her hip, angry at me for the first time ever, or George showing up, big-eyed and bewildered, to ask what's going on with Sailor Supergirl. But none of that happens. It's as though I don't make a ripple as I drop off the face of the earth. Chapter 45. I'm not the one who was hit by a car. I'm not the one who has 8 children and is expecting another. I'm not Jace trying to hold it all together while thinking of selling the thing that gives me peace. Waking up every morning and feeling like pulling the covers over my head gives me a kick of self-hatred. I'm not the one this happened to. I'm just some girl with an easy life and a trust fund. Just like I told Jace. And yet, I can't get out of bed. Mom is extra cheerful and solicitous these days, blending my smoothie before I have a chance to, leaving little packages on my bed with cheery post-it notes. Saw this cute top and knew it would look great on you. Bought some sandals for myself and knew you'd love them too. She doesn't say anything about me sleeping till noon. She ignores my monosyllabic conversation, amping up her own to fill the silences. Over dinner, she and Clay chatter away about getting me an internship in Washington, D.C. next summer, or maybe something in New York, fanning out the possibilities in front of me like paint chips. How lovely this would look on your future, while I poke at my chowder. No longer caring what Mom will say, I give notice at the B&T, knowing Nan is just a few yards away radiating anger and resentment through the walls of the gift shop makes me feel sick. It's also impossible to concentrate on watching every swimmer at the Olympic pool when I keep finding myself staring fixedly at nothing at all. Unlike Felipe at Breakfast Ahoy, Mr. Lennox doesn't get belligerent. Instead, he argues when I give him my notice and try to hand him my clean, neatly folded suit and jacket and skirt.
Oh, now, Ms. Reed, surely.
He glances out the window, takes a deep breath, then goes over and shuts his office door.
Surely you don't want to make this precipitous choice.
I tell him I have to, unexpectedly touched by how flustered he is. He pulls a small paisley silk handkerchief out of his jacket pocket and hands it to me.
You have always been an excellent worker. Your work ethic is unparalleled. I would hate to see you retire impulsively. Is there perhaps a delicate situation on the job which makes you uncomfortable? The new lifeguard? Is he making unwelcome advances on your person?
Part of me wants to giggle hysterically, but Mr. Lennox's large brown eyes, magnified by his glasses, radiate sincerity and concern.
Do I need to have words with someone?
He asks.
Is there something you need to get off your chest?
If you only knew. For a moment, the words crowd into my mouth. My mother nearly killed the father of the boy I love, and now I've broken his heart and I can't tell anyone. My best friend hates me for something she did and I can't fix it. I don't know who my own mother is anymore, and I don't recognize myself, and everything is terrible. I imagine pouring all those words out to Mr. Lennox, who was flustered by not knowing the right hour for a lumber delivery. There's no way. It's nothing about the job. I just can't stay here. He nods.
I accept your resignation with great regret.
I thank him. As I turn to go, he calls,
Ms. Reed.
Hmm?
I do hope you will continue to swim. You may keep the key. Our arrangement for your training stands.
Recognizing this for the gift it is, I say, thank you, and leave before I can say more. With no schedule, no babysitting or breakfast shift or lifeguard gig, days and nights bleed into one another. I can't settle down during nights and spend them roaming the house restlessly or watching Lifetime movies where everyone is worse off than I am. Why don't I call my sister? The answer is, of course, that I do. Of course I do. She knows this situation from the inside out, knows Mom, me, knows it all. But here's what happens when I call. Straight to voicemail. My sister's husky voice, her deep from the belly laugh, so familiar and so far away. Got me or not, really. You know what to do. Talk to me. I may even call you back. My imagining. Tracy out on the beach, bright blue eyes squinting against the sun, having that carefree summer she told Mom she'd earned, phone in Flip's pocket or switched to off, because what was the big deal? Their perfect summer. I open my mouth to say something, but snap the phone shut. The strangest part? Mom used to notice if I had a nearly invisible stain on my shirt, or hadn't conditioned my hair enough, or if my morning routine deviated in some minuscule way. You always have a smoothie before work, Samantha. Why are you having toast? I've read that a change in a teenager's routine could be a red flag for a drug habit. But now? Clouds of pot smoke could be unfurling under my door, and that probably wouldn't stop the blizzard of post-it notes that are her primary form of communication these days. Please pick up my silk suit at the dry cleaner. Twall chair and study has stain. Apply OxyClean. We'll be out very late tonight. Turn on alarm when you go to bed. I've quit all my jobs and become a recluse, and my mother doesn't seem to notice.
Sweetheart, good timing, Mom says jovially as I drag myself into the kitchen in response to her, Yoo-hoo, Samantha, I need you. I was just showing this nice man how I make my lemonade. Kurt, did you say your name was?
Mom asks the man seated at our kitchen island after waving cheerfully at me with the lemon zester.
Carl,
he responds. I know him. He's Mr. Agnoli, who takes the photographs for the Stony Bay Bugle. He always photographed the winning swim teams. Now he's in our kitchen, looking starstruck by Mom.
We thought a quick piece about the state senator at home would be great, along with pictures of her making lemonade. A metaphor for what she can do for the state,
Mr. Agnoli tells me. Mom turns around and checks the sugar-water mixture melting on the stove, enlightening Mr. Agnoli about how it's the added lemon zest that really does the trick. I'm going back upstairs, I say, and do so. Maybe if I can just sleep for 100 years... I'll wake up in a better story. I'm jolted awake by Mom jerking on my arm.
You can't doze the day away, sweetheart. I've got plans.
Everything about her looks the same as always. Her smoothly up-twisted chignon, her faultless makeup, her calm blue eyes. I'm in a backward version of the way I felt after Jace spent the night. When big things happen to you, shouldn't they show on your face? Not on Mom's, though.
I took the whole day off. She's rubbing my back now. I've been so busy neglecting you, I know. I thought maybe we could go get facials, maybe...